It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Indeed, it is hump day, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out the website, kimmunson.com. That is spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. As well as if you want to send me a message, that's kim@kimmunson.com. We've got a great show planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines, talk a little bit about the State of the Union address last night. Third and fourth segment, we will be talking with Michael Sandoval. He is the managing editor for Western Wire, and he is doing some amazing investigative reporting regarding the Denver City Council and they're trying to pass a climate tax. And he's got a series of op-eds that's coming out. And so we'll talk with him about that. The first three are out. The most recent one was just a couple of days ago. And so that's Michael Sandoval with the Western Wire. We'll talk with him in the third and fourth segment. As we jump into things here, we always look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately has to come down to force. And if something is a really good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. It is never compassionate to steal stuff. That is to take other people's stuff, whether or not it's with a weapon or with policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation.
Hear, hear. My favorite.
That is your favorite. And we continue to see the overreach of government trying to use force. And those. And Patty did a really good job on the summary yesterday of talking about the... You know, the force words, they're regulate, mandate, compliant. All of those things are code words for force. And that is totally antithetical to, you know, the American idea. And freedom, when we talk about freedom, the founders talked about liberty all the time. And, you know, there's been an assault on some of these great American words like freedom, America, liberty. But as our good friend Ben Martin has said, is that liberty, or let's see, how does this go? Liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. And then in some of my reading just recently, they said with every freedom, there is a responsibility. And so that is the freedom that we're talking about here in America versus force. And that's why we look at all these issues. There's a lot of wild stuff going on down at the State House, Steve.
I'm sitting here with a big grin on my face because I think of Ben's quote there, if that's attributed, if those are his words specifically, or if he's just passing that thought along to us. But, man, there's a lot of people in my neighborhood who are exercising freedom, but not so much liberty. And then further down in the list, in our list of stories from Patty, is, you know, a very interesting little story about an HOA and how things can get out of control. So I don't know. I'm probably not connecting the dots very well here, but it is so true.
Well, in a free society, in a free and civil society, there's something that's very important also, and that is good manners. When Wilberforce, back in the 1700s, he'd taken a look at the British slave trade and just realized that could not continue on. And so it took him about 20 years, but they finally got the British slave trade shut down. But the other thing that was really important to him was good manners. And I guess, you know, let's jump in here just very quickly on our bill of the day, because I was thinking about the bill that we highlighted the other day, and that is the down at the State House legislation has been proposed that people can do bodily functions in public. And you talk about bad manners. I think that's really, really bad manners. But today, this is the one that Patty has highlighted, and it is Senate Bill 20-065, and it's to limit mobile electronic devices while driving. It's concerning a limitation on the use of these mobile electronic devices, and this is the summary. It limits the use while driving to adult drivers who use the mobile electronic device through a hands-free accessory. The bill establishes penalties. So there's all your force words. Penalties of $50 and 2 points for a first violation, $100 and 2 points for a second violation, $200 and 4 points for a third or subsequent violation, and $300 and 4 points if the violation involves text messaging. You know, I think that I think an education campaign for people as they are driving, and we can talk to our friends and family to be careful not to text. But I don't think government needs to be involved in this, Steve.
I don't know. We talk about the roles of government, and not that I appreciate it, but one of them is having to protect people from themselves. I mean, if you get T-boned tomorrow on your way in here by someone who was, you know, had a device in hand, it's, and you know, and your injuries are severe. It's like, why? I mean, common sense basically has been overwritten in this individuals who thinks they're smarter, or they're smart enough to be able to text and drive at the same time.
Okay, Steve, this is not going to change that person that is doing that. And I hear what you're saying, and so I think you're siding with the legislators on this one.
No, not that I want to, but again, people are stupid. And our insurance rates are going up because of it. You know, car insurance, auto insurance is going up because of this. We all pay the price.
Okay, I think we need to do an education campaign, and quite frankly, you're going to have a government picking winners and losers. They'll let somebody go by that is on the phone. I mean, if this is really what's going to happen, law enforcement is going to be so busy doing this, but yet this legislature and the city of Denver doesn't mind putting criminals out on the street, and I would venture to say that we've had a number of accidents by illegal aliens. How many times have you heard about an accident or somebody hitting a car and they leave the scene of the accident? And many times I think it's because they don't have insurance or because they don't have a driver's license.
Or worse yet, a hit and run. Yes.
A hit and run. So I think that we could handle this through an education campaign. I think this is the heavy hand of government.
I guess, you know, okay, I had a birthday yesterday. Maybe I'm getting too old. But I've seen so much of human nature, the bad side of it. I think there's no education campaign that's going to do it. People are just generally defiant and down, you know, and their defiance then makes them stupid, and we all pay the price. But I don't want to, this is not that type of show, and I don't want to go there. So,
okay, well,
carry on.
We'll carry on. I think that I need to continue to get my brain around this, because I need to persuade you. I've got to persuade you, Steve. So I'm going to go to work on that.
That could be one of your biggest challenges in life. So maybe easier to get another producer.
No, not at all. Not at all. So with that, I always like to say thank you. You do such a great job. We have such a wonderful team, and that is you and Zach and Patty and Keith and Charlie. So thank you to all of you, and thank you to each of you listeners out there. You're each treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. Go out today and do your very best and take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. Our inspiration, and for some reason, the song Climb Every Mountain, I think it's because there's so much going on out there. I thought, okay, Julie Andrews, I wonder, what's some quotes that she could give us? You know, she was Mary Poppins, and she's an English actress, singer, and author. She's a child actress who appeared in the West End in 1948, made her Broadway debut in The Boyfriend. She rose to prominence, starring in Broadway musicals such as My Fair Lady and Camelot. She starred in Rodgers Hammerstein's written for television musical Cinderella. She was Mary Poppins, won an Academy Award for Best Actress in that role. And she starred in The Sound of Music, playing Maria von Trapp. And so here is her quote, and I love it. Perseverance is failing 19 times and succeeding the 20th. So never give up. And I like our joke today, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. If lawyers are disbarred and clergymen are defrocked, doesn't it follow that electricians can be delighted, musicians denoted, cowboys deranged, models deposed, tree surgeons debarked, and dry cleaners depressed?
Yeah, one for politicians?
No, I'll have to think one up.
Okay.
Okay. So with that, I think what we'll do is we'll go to break early because I'd like to talk a bit about the State of the Union address. And before we do that, you know, now that the Super Bowl is over, we're focusing on the Avalanche and the Nuggets, and they've got work to do to make the playoffs, and the place to watch all those games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. Wednesday, today, if you dine in, it's wing day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99, and they have some new roasted wings you can try out. My favorites, the boneless wings. And if you don't want to cook, drop by Hooters Restaurants, pick up dinner, take it home. You can have it delivered right to your front door. More information, go to my website, kimmunson.com. Look at my sponsors and click on that, and all of my sponsors will come up. They all have a landing page there. Check it out. You'll get all the information. So let's go to break. This is Kim Munson, and we will be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. It's hump day. Congratulations. And last night was the State of the Union address. And it was, I thought it was really moving. I mean, I actually, there were a couple of times where I got tears in my eyes, Steve.
Me too.
And
I say that freely. Me too.
So, you know, President Trump went through the many successes that we've had. And the fact that unemployment among almost all the sectors is at historic lows. People are back to work. There's such dignity in work. I think that that's, you know, that's so exciting. And, of course, then the trade deals. The first phase with China. We got the U.S., Mexico, and Canada trade deal completed. And as he has mentioned, that we had these deals in place that were not good for Americans. And so he comes in and he changes them. How's that?
Oh, there you go.
He does some new ones. and it's good for Americans. And for some reason, we've had so many years that it's just been really subtle, Steve. But there's been this, just this pull down. Of course, you're hearing it now with white privilege. You know, all these things that are pulling down Western culture. Wasn't it Jesse Jackson? Hey, hey, ho, ho. Western civ has got to go. We quit learning about the men and women that, as imperfect as they are, they had an idea that about freedom and these rights given by God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness and property rights. And I feel like for the last 30 or 40 years, and since the, you know, probably the 60s, there's just been kind of this pull down. It's like nipping at the heels, like you don't deserve that. You work hard, but you don't really deserve that. And President Trump, I think, has really hit something, and he's fighting back. And people are pretty excited about it, Steve.
Well, clearly, last night, as he was going through all those criteria about what has changed since he's been in, and, you know, I thought all the naysayers are going, listen to him hog the credit for all this kind of stuff. It's like, no, I don't think that's hogging the credit. It's denoting what has changed and what we've been able to achieve. But as the camera did the long view every time they, you know, the group to his, I think in the reverse of the room, the group to his left, in other words, the conservative Republican side, hopped to their feet to applaud what was happening in the other portion of the room. The un-American side of the room is what I... That's the only thing I could call it. Why would you not cheer for those things as he was rattling them off?
No matter what side of the aisle, why wouldn't you stand for the fact that we have the lowest unemployment or very close to the lowest unemployment for blacks and Latinos and women? Why wouldn't you stand for that? There were so many times that you're like, if you really love this country, if you really love the people that you are representing, then of course one would stand for that. But it was a bit of political theater.
A bit?
Yeah. I found this quote. I'm just going to go through some things here that I made some notes. And first thing was not cheering for our successes. I mean, come on. Let's be excited when people are doing better.
The operative word, our successes.
Right.
I mean, again, like you just said, can I be happy for my constituents, even though I'm I'm on that side of the aisle, and I've got to be, for whatever reason, I have to be seen as being in opposition. But can I be happy for my people who are benefiting?
Boy, one would sure think so.
No.
But so that was, of course, very a visual that was pretty amazing. I thought his quote, freedom unifies the soul. I thought that was really interesting.
Freedom, what did he say right before that, though? Socialism destroys nations, but...
freedom unifies the soul.
Yes.
Okay. The two young 13-year-olds, first of all, Ian, the young man that stood up that says that he wants to go to space. I just thought that that was, really neat. He wants to go to the Air Force Academy. But then they talked about his grandfather, Charles McGee, who was a Tuskegee Airman, 100 years old. And I've had the great privilege to interview both an original and kind of a second-generation Tuskegee Airman. And those Tuskegee Airmen, they really were up against a lot of prejudice, a lot of racism at that time. And instead of whining about it, what they did is they said, I talked with Lieutenant Colonel James Harvey. He said, we decided we were going to be the best. And in 1949, Lieutenant Colonel James Harvey, his team won the Top Gun contest in 1949. And they were also called the Red Tails. And it got to a point that many of our bomber pilots would request them as their escorts because they were so good. And so anyway, President Trump recognizes Ian and then his great-grandfather, Charles McGee, 100 years old, and then makes him a brigadier general. I had tears in my eyes, Steve. I thought it was, and to see the little guy to see him with the pride for his grandfather, I thought it was an amazing moment.
Yeah, the 13-year-old is plainly old enough to understand World War II, to understand the horrific past of the African American over the last 100 years, and put it all together. Here's the big picture. Mm-hmm. What a blessing to him.
And then he did 130 combat missions. Do you know, I mean, that's a lot. And so he was in Korea, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And President Trump made him a brigadier general last night. I thought it was an amazing thing. Another quote by President Trump, and this is, again, inherently American, and that is that we've generations before us have rejected limits to our children's future. And socialism limits everybody, and it certainly limits our children's future. And so with that, he talked about school choice and this young single mom who had her child in a school that was failing. And he said, he's calling on Congress to put forth legislation to allow families to be able to go to the school of their choice, and awarded this mom and this young girl a scholarship so she could do that. Pretty amazing, Steve. Pretty amazing.
John Rush went through, he had advanced whatever to be able to go through all the people who would be in the gallery who are going to be recognized. When he talked about that story the way that came about, he specifically said or named the governor of Pennsylvania rejected, that schooling thing. And I thought, even when I first heard John talk about it last night, and then sure enough, it came up in this State of the Union, I thought, man, what a sock in the gut to the governor of Pennsylvania. Not one on to be mentioned, not necessarily by name, but hey, there's only one governor of Pennsylvania. So, that was quite a recognition.
And to that point, I don't think he really named any names last night.
No.
He would refer to the previous administration or the governor of Pennsylvania. I also really love this, and that is ramping up vocational technical training. This idea that everybody needs to go to college and take on all this debt, and then, I hear some of the classes these people are having to pay for so that they can get their degree. It's I think that's a waste of money on a bunch of that stuff. And, of course, we've seen these kids take on these school loans, and that really ballooned under the previous administration. And now they're looking at kind of a, you know, some hopelessness in how much they owe on that. So we've got to get this economy really going. But you can make a great living, you know, an electrician, welder, plumber. You can make a great living. You can have your own business. We need to be pulling back rules and regulations so that people can start their businesses. But I love that he is going to be supporting vocational technical training, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, it's become all too obvious. The statistics are bearing it out. And again, how many downsides do we need to see? We watch the millennials coming up through the ranks and stepping into the workforce, and they have this horrendous college debt staring at them in the face, and here comes you-know-who offering, you know, debt forgiveness for college and other freebies. And so, yes, let's, by all means, let's push or give the alternatives to young people coming up through the ranks and saying, you know, maybe college isn't for you.
And that's okay.
And there's a lot of different reasons for that, and that's okay.
And that's okay. And we need to make sure that through high school we are you know, giving kids the tools that they can actually go out and take care of themselves, make a living. And I'm not sure that I believe a college degree is totally necessary. Then, of course, he has the great line, "Stand with me." So, of course, then you know, you're going to have the cameras where there's going to be people not standing with him as he's talking about all of these great things. Rush Limbaugh was there. And as I'm sure all of you know, he was recently diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And it was reported that President Trump was going to award him the Medal of Freedom. And last night they did it. He was sitting right next to Melania Trump. And at that point, she gave him the Medal of Freedom. It was really an interesting moment. And Rush Limbaugh was truly, I think, moved by that gesture.
How many years we've been listening to Rush and watching him in different roles and scenarios, but I don't think the guy has ever been speechless in his life until last night. He was speechless.
He was speechless, and it was a beautiful moment as well. And then once again, the president's calling on Congress to end late-term abortion. And I thought that was great. So when we talk about these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, he's standing for life. Two things, though, I've got to say, not jazzed about, and that is the paid family leave. That is not government's business. And the other is high-speed internet to rural America. That is something that I think should be left up to private enterprise. And so those two things were a little, I wish he wasn't doing those two things. Like, you know, we have to be honest here about what we like and what we don't like. And forced paid family leave.
One I get.
Yeah.
The bandwidth one, I don't know. Private enterprise, you know they won't do it unless there's an incentive. So, you know, do the people in outlying areas, do they need... I don't know how to say it. I mean, is it just okay for them to still be running on a dial-up modem? Or,
but they're not. A lot of people are. And also, it's a lifestyle choice, though. Many times people move to rural areas because they want to, you know, be a little bit freer. And I'm not sure that government should come in and pay for that. I think that with technology, we can come up with that, and once government gets involved, it taps down creativity and innovation. The other thing that we need to chat about, and that is just the bad manners of Nancy Pelosi. You talk about a classless thing that occurred, and that apparent. And I, you know what, you and I get up so early after the State of the Union address, and it's like I'm going to go to bed. So I wasn't going to watch the rebuttal. I didn't watch any of the rest of it. Apparently, she had a 2-year-old. Temper tantrum and tore up the speech right there on the dais. I mean, it's unbelievable.
She would have loved to maybe tear the whole thing in one swoop, but it was too thick. So she made 4 separate swipes at it, and it was, now that I've seen it replayed, and the look on her face is like, I'll show you.
Well, I haven't watched the video yet, so I'm going to have to do that.
We'll watch it after the show. I know the guy who's on the phone here might want to have something to say about that.
Okay, well, that might be Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. Jason, what do you think about 2-year-old temper tantrum last night?
Yeah, that was, you know, her behavior is always, you always wonder if her teeth are going to fall out or something because she's making all those weird faces back there. But, yeah, I was kind of stunned at that, and I was doing a double take, and did she just tear the speech up and like, throw it down on the desk in disgust? And Steve, who was she talking to through the whole thing?
Oh, that's right.
I mean, I kept saying, who are you talking to, Nancy? I mean, there wasn't anybody really close enough that could have heard her, so I'm not sure who she was communicating with. Maybe she's just talking to herself.
Well, I mean, her age certainly would lend itself to that. And I had that thought. She's either muttering to herself or maybe she's got some kind of communications device and somebody else in the room is helping her monitor her flock.
How many
times did you see her looking, you know, not at Pence, you know, as clearly looking off to her right and monitoring that crowd as making sure she knew, you know, she had the iron fist and kept everybody under wraps.
Yeah, I think there was some communication. It seemed like one time, Jason, she said no, no. So, so she must have had a device or something in her ear because
we need a lip reader.
You need a lip reader?
Yeah, to see what she was muttering or saying the whole time.
Oh, I bet somebody will get on that today. So
okay.
Okay, but let's get a market update. Now, it was up yesterday, right? I mean, it's been a kind of a roller coaster.
Well, you know what's interesting is, if you look at the S&P, we had talked about it a couple of days ago, and I had mentioned, you know, watch and see if it holds at the 50-day moving average, and it did. It came right to it, bounced off the day before yesterday, was extremely strong. It actually, moved above the highs it had been at before, you know, most of this stuff started with the coronavirus. And the NASDAQ yesterday, Kim, actually broke out in a huge fashion, and it's gone to a new all-time high yesterday. So at least at this point, the coronavirus is, I hate to say it, a big nothing burger.
Okay, well, I really hope so. I went to a presentation last night by an economist, before the State of the Union address, and they said, and he did say something interesting that possibly the coronavirus is going to slow up getting some of the goods and services over here from China, and that could affect the economy just a little bit. Any thoughts on that, Jason?
I guess anything is possible when you have a lot of Chinese factories and activity shut down. Yeah, I mean, that can have some impact. It could impact some of the imports they may be bringing in from us and other parts of the world. But I guess as far as the big panic and this was going to be the thing to take the market down, at least so far, that doesn't seem to be the case unless we get a change or a mutation or
something like that.
Insane happens.
Okay. And one other thing I wanted to just mention, we've talked a lot about it over the last week or so, and that is these workshops that you're doing tomorrow night at 6:30 and on Saturday morning at 10 in 3 locations, Parker, Arvada, and Windsor. And it's a 1-hour class. And it says, I love this, this 1-hour class can save you years of regret. 1 hour to save you years of regret. And you and your colleagues over there at Presidential Wealth Management will go through on how to plan in retirement, how to minimize your tax bill. And it seems like it's, knowledge is power, Jason, knowledge is power.
Well, it certainly is. And one of the guys doing the presentations is Bruce Larson, and you know him, mm-hmm. Kim, and mm-hmm. He's very sharp on taxes. He's our internal go-to guy when you have a tax question. He even wrote a book about taxes that is available, actually, if you want to get one. I don't know if they're giving them away at the workshops, too. Sorry, Kim, I'm a little off on some of the details.
Okay, not a problem.
But what I'm trying to say is Bruce, he knows some stuff about taxes. So I think it's worth it to come to the workshop. This isn't something where they're trying to sell books and tapes at the back of the room or trap you or get you to sign up for some silly subscription. It's an actual good, solid workshop about how taxes can change once you get into retirement and what to be prepared for. And again, Kim, guess what? It's not all bad news, believe it or not.
Well, that's great. So that sign up for these. Go to my website, kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and you can sign up right there, and it'll take you directly to whichever workshop you want to sign up for. So, Jason, I know that the presentations, as much care as you put into our calls every morning, is the same kind of things that you and your colleagues bring to what you do. So thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great one, Kim.
Thank you so much. And on the line is Michael Sandoval. He is the managing editor of Western Wire, and he's really a great, I would say, investigative journalist. And he is doing a series of, I was saying op-eds. They're actually, I think, kind of exposés on the Denver City Council, the climate tax. And so we're going to go to break. When we come back, we have Michael Sandoval on the line. You will not want to miss it.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
How come all the pretty girls like you are taking...
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out the website, Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and sign up for our regular email list, our newsletter. And then also, if you have any messages, you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. I am thrilled to have on the line with me Michael Sandoval. He is the managing editor of Western Wire. And that website is westernwire.net, westernwire.net. Michael Sandoval, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. Thanks for having me on.
I had said before we went to break that you really are, I think, an investigative journalist, and that this is more an expose. And Steve, during the break, said that's a rare breed, an investigative journalist. But you have three pieces. There's how many are you going to do? Do you know how many are going to be in this multi-part series?
We're not quite sure because there's just so much. We actually we received more than 1,000 emails. And in total, there's about 2,500 documents in this open records request. So there's actually quite a large chunk, and we're just going through them and seeing what's in there.
Okay, well, the first piece that you did was January 27th, and you can find that at westernwire.net. The title is Exclusive. Emails show City of Denver excluded businesses sought environmental input on last year's climate tax proposal. So, Michael, tell us what you did exactly. How did this whole thing start?
So the open records request itself started actually back in October. This is a long time coming. Investigative journalism is not a instantaneous kind of process. We actually filed an open records request in October, but the climate tax debate itself took place in July and August, at least publicly, last summer in Denver City Council. And that was looking at a tax hike on both electricity and natural gas usage for commercial and industrial properties. And that's at least what the public and, that debate happened in a very short amount of time. Approximately 6 to 8 weeks, at least that what you would see in normal stories about what went on. The proposal did not make it to a referred measure. They wanted to get something on the ballot in 2019, and it sort of died in that version. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock was able to come up with a compromise solution, looking at some taking money to do a sustainability office instead of what was to have been a tax increase within the city of Denver on, like I said, commercial and industrial properties. But what our open records reveals and really pulls the curtain back on is what was going on behind the scenes. As Paul Harvey said, well, here's the rest of the story. There was a very quick rush in the public view of what happened, and this investigative series really tries to go through and say, now this is a much longer process. Here's who was involved in a much more detailed fashion to give us an insight as to how did the climate tax proposal itself start, where did it come from, who was behind it, and who was at the table, and most importantly, as you read the title from the first piece, is who wasn't at the table, and these emails clearly show what happened.
Okay, so who was at the table? Who wasn't at the table? Who's behind this?
Well, for our purposes, the one of the key portions of this was who was not at the table, and you would imagine that if you're going to increase a tax on your businesses, both commercial and industrial, and you would have representatives, stakeholders from those groups. But in one of the emails, we found a document that was sent from the president of the city council's staff to other city council members answering some questions. And it said that, and this is a direct quote, due to the reduced timeline between the citizen initiative, which was what I was talking about, the measure to put this tax proposal on the ballot, due to the reduced timeline between the citizen initiative and the mayor's small work group, there wasn't sufficient time to bring in commercial and industrial owners to the discussion, end quote. And so we know who was left out of the discussion, but they also included a very concise list of who was at the table. The groups they listed, and this is from the same document that you can read, the whole document and email is posted on this story. Sierra Club, the Alliance Center, which is a umbrella organization that covers several dozen environmental groups based in Denver, Wind and Solar Denver, Climate Mobilization, Solar United Neighbors of Colorado, Natural Resources Defense Council, and environmental consultants and activists. And that's directly from the document. This is not our interpolation or we've literally found this document that actually just lays us all out for who was included in these conversations that actually had begun in March, before there was any publicity on, a climate tax. And interestingly, Kim, I think your listeners will be surprised that it actually didn't start off as a tax proposal. The initial ballot discussion was a ban on natural gas installations, phase out of natural gas heat by a specific date, and a phase out of all gasoline powered vehicles. So what we saw publicly in July and August as a climate tax actually began discussions in earlier in 2019 as a ban on natural gas. So that should be sort of a wake up call of as to where these kind of proposals are going. Usually we see the kinder, gentler version. It's just a tax for whatever purpose is, but this actually began as a natural gas ban, which I think obviously has far less support.
So you're saying that the Denver City Council was entertaining an idea to ban natural gas and gasoline in Denver? Is that what they were talking about?
Yeah, so Resilient Denver, which is an anti-fossil fuel group who last week put out the proposal that they're going to ban fracking in Denver. So this is a group that doesn't want natural gas or oil development, fossil fuel development of any kind. This is directly, again, from the document, quoting it. They approached Councilman Clark, who's the president, initially in March 2019, and the group discussed, again, a quote, discussed putting forth a ballot initiative that included a ban on all natural gas installations, a phase out of natural gas heat. About 80% of Colorado uses natural gas heat for our heating by a specific date, and a phase out of all gasoline-powered vehicles in the city by a certain date. End quote. That was the original plan, not a climate tax, but actual bans on natural gas and natural gas heat and gasoline-powered vehicles.
Okay, so would that mean that at some point in time people couldn't drive into downtown Denver?
I think they're referring to the city itself. But I think one of the key things in there is natural gas heat. I think that's they're talking about electrification. That is the end result is electrification of heating, electrification of vehicles, and electrification of all new installations, so new housing, new commercial and industrial properties, and of course, as you can see in our later stories, that if you not just ban, but if you actually tax natural gas per therm, certain businesses are going to be affected by that. In addition to the electricity increased costs, restaurants obviously. So there was pushback by the business community, but really in the first piece we set up who was there and what actually was being asked for. Further on down, it's kind of funny. The assistant to Councilman Clark, president of the city council, indicated that the goals were aspirational but unrealistic.
You think? Oh my gosh.
And the group tried to move forward with a bill that could be supported by council that was feasible and satisfy the climate goals of Resilient Denver. And in return, what they were trying to do is get Resilient Denver to drop their initiative. The group actually approached both the city council and ran its own effort to get something on the ballot. And actually, they did manage to get a measure onto the 2020 ballot. So, for folks out there saying, all this happened last summer and it, didn't go anywhere, why do we care? Well, Resilient Denver's proposal is on the 2020 ballot in Denver, and that's to not only increase the taxes on commercial and industrial properties, which is where the city council was going, because they were concerned about residential tax increases. The Resilient Denver proposal actually has, tax measure that's going to be on the ballot has a residential component as well. So that would be residents and businesses in Denver being subject to both electricity and natural gas tax hikes.
But wait, I thought, that puts the question on the table, Michael, that they want to push people to electricity, but they're going to tax that more. Boy, this is not making a lot of sense to me. But let's go to break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about that and also some of the other things that you want to hit regarding this expose, this series of pieces that are coming out in westernwire.net. But it doesn't seem to make sense if you're going to tax electricity more and you're trying to push people there. So I'm going to have to mull that over during break. Let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Michael Sandoval, managing editor of Western Wire. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Sweet and
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out the website, Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. All kinds of great information there. I did do an op-ed regarding the homelessness industrial complex that's on there, so be sure and check that out. And, of course, we have our writer's circle. There's Rick Turnquist, Patty Kurgan, Roger Bianco. There's all kinds of great pieces there, so be sure and check that out. Michael Sandoval, managing editor of WesternWire.net. You said this resilient Denver is behind a ballot measure that's going to be on the ballot in Denver in this November. And it's going to be a tax on both electricity and natural gas for commercial, industrial, and residents. But you also said that they're trying to push people to electricity. I don't understand. Why are they taxing electricity?
They have an interesting goal. The basic overall goal is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And that's where the focus, especially on natural gas at the beginning, as we were talking before the break, on banning new installations, banning the use of gasoline vehicles. Obviously, they've also this year, just last week, introduced a measure to ban fracking within the city and county of Denver. That's where their target is. I think this is sort of, their secondary measure is to just restrain the usage initially. But of course, these emails essentially reveal the hand that they're trying to play with, and that is moving towards full bans on fossil fuel usage, both oil and natural gas. Of course, like I said, Coloradans, approximately 80% of heating in this state, which is important as we sit here. I think we're at -5 out at DIA this morning. Mm. It heats their house with natural gas. And so that's where their ultimate target is, and that's what these emails reveal. I think that's the big takeaway. We can I'd love for the listeners to take a look at these emails themselves, these documents, and that can get in the weeds, but the real takeaway is what's the end goal, what's the end game, and that's where they're pushing for.
Okay, a couple of things I want to make, just a comment. We talk about these issues as freedom versus force, and there's code words for force. A couple of the other ones you just mentioned are ban and restrain. Those are code words for force. And then this whole reducing greenhouse emissions, a week or so ago, I had Dr. Patrick Moore on, who is the sensible environmentalist, and he was actually one of the co-founders of Greenpeace. And it was an excellent interview, and he basically says that the whole climate change thing is basically, it's not based on science. So be sure and check out that show. You can go to my website. We have all the show recaps there. But it, in a way, they're using something that we can't see to say that we want to reduce it, to basically shut down our economy. And like you mentioned, -5 out at DIA this morning. When I got up, Michael, I was grateful that I had a warm house and I didn't have to go out and get wood or dung or whatever and burn it to keep the house warm. And Dr. Moore's point is that if you really care about the climate, then you would want to, continue to support these affordable, efficient, reliable modes of energy, such as natural gas. Ultimately, hopefully we can get to hydrogen and nuclear as well, because otherwise you're going to have people out there cutting down trees to stay warm again.
Well, I think when you're talking about especially the freedom versus force, one of the great quotes in the second piece is from one of the Denver Department of Public Health and Environment environmental analysts, and this guy, his name is Paul Aldretti, expressed his concern in a series of emails back and forth with one of the council members, and he called this entire process last summer ill-considered political grandstanding. And here's the great
ouch.
It's, yeah, and it's right to your point about force and about the layers of government that this would create. And he said, this is a quote, "I am completely adverse to creating another city bureaucracy that would probably spend money unnecessarily on administrative costs and lucrative contracts that could otherwise be used to the benefit of the climate and the community. I really think you need to talk to people who have done this other places and bring their knowledge to bear." This is the best part. "I find the current process to be way too insular. There's nothing worse than self-appointed experts," unquote. And so, you know, it really gets to the point of you know, these are very limited conversations. He also points out that the process, the stakeholder process, didn't include, you know, the business community. It doesn't include, you know, the unintended consequences of, you know, endangering businesses, which obviously means jobs. Small businesses are vulnerable. He says other businesses might just leave Denver. And where would that leave, you know, the residents of Denver, the employees, if that's what's going to happen? So, you know, his point is that, you know, he is, because he's definitely someone who expresses his support for doing something about these issues that he believes are sincere and very important. But he just basically blasts this city council member, Paul Cashman, in this series of back and forth emails saying, this is the worst way to go about doing this. So it's really an interesting conversation. And normally when you do an open records request, you don't get to see a lot of back and forth kind of conversations. Most of the time that's either excluded or redacted due to some of the open records requests. You know, they have the ability to say, no, this is deliberative process, which just means things were being decided and you didn't have the final result yet. So that's sort of, you know, privileged material. And in this case, we actually got several emails and email conversations that really have a back and forth, and, you know, we're like, we're just working through this kind of tone to them, which is, I think, both very important and just very unusual. And that's why, you know, not only did we decide to do it last fall, and we, you know, we finally got the documents and went through them, and we're going through them in this series. But I think for your listeners, we don't normally get to see this part of the process at any level, municipal, county, or state legislature. This tends to be behind closed doors, so to speak, both literally and figuratively, and not getting these documents. So this is very unusual.
Were you surprised when you got all that?
Absolutely. I've been doing, I appreciate, you know, the shout out as an investigative reporter. I've been doing this for 11 years. And this is not only one of the biggest productions it was a four-figure open records request. That's how expensive this thing was, because it was so productive in terms of volume of material. But what was surprising was the level of just exposure of the document that was circulated among the council members from President Clark's staff, talking about, you know, who, what, when, where, why in the process, because several council members themselves who seemed to all be on board with doing something about the climate were all like, hey, we only had a couple days after you've introduced these measures to, you know, look at it. There's no stakeholder process. That's something really, when listeners go to see this series, is a thread through the first three pieces, is this was rushed. Very little consideration about both intended and unintended consequences, and really did, leave large segments, obviously the business community, but just when you only have two city council meetings, not really an opportunity for citizens, for activists, for anybody who's concerned to show up. And I think that's the point.
It's a strategy, though. Michael, I served for 4 years on city council, and there's different strategies on ways to get things through. And I you are the guy to ask about these open records requests, because I remember that both through the Colorado Municipal League, CML, and also on city council, they're talking about record retention. And it seems that at some point in time, they can start to destroy records. Tell me about that.
There's to my knowledge, there's no retention requirement. And especially when I've dealt with the state government, so executive offices and Department of Natural Resources, et cetera, it varies by office. It certainly did under the Hickenlooper administration. And going to the actual legislature itself, there's really no, 6 month or 1 year period. It was kind of office by office as far as who and how long they would retain documents. My concern, if I were to ask for a bill that would specify a length, would be that, there could be conversations or documents that, take place during the beginning of the legislative session, say January, mm-hmm. that wouldn't be around come May. And a lot of, that's only 4 months. And a lot of times, especially in these legislative sessions, you don't really know you don't hear rumors about how the sausage is made until like April and May.
Right, right.
When you might want to go back and say, hey, who was talking to who and how are things going on? But by that
Michael,
time, for all intents and purposes, you couldn't get those documents.
Oh, well, let's keep it up. I'm going to get you back on. We're going to watch what you're doing here. We're out of time now, but that voice is Michael Sandoval. He is the managing editor of Western Wire. Go to westernwire.net and check these out. Michael Sandoval, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, our quote for today, Julie Andrews. She said, sometimes opportunities float right past your nose. Work hard, apply yourself, and be ready. When an opportunity comes, you can grab it. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
No one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, the source AM and FM. AM 560 and 100.7 FM. 560thesource.com.